Americans for the Arts.
Yay, Americans for the Arts. We're all Americans for the Arts, aren't we? Here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. Thank you so much for listening. I miss Janelle. Janelle, where'd you go? You are listening to WMNF, the best little station in the nation. 40 years of radio activity. This show is indeed Art in Your Ear. On today's show, we'll be talking with some of the cast and the director of the Thanksgiving play, a very, very funny play, very sharply funny play at Job Site Theater. And then also, I've got a ton of music. It's All Souls Day, so I've got some music for that. We'll be starting off with a song for All Souls. And what else? Well, and I've got stuff going on. Hey, I want to let you know that support for WMNF comes from our members, our wonderful, wonderful members. And Goodwill Industries Suncoast, committed to helping people achieve their full potential through employment services, training, and affordable housing. The sale of donated items at Goodwill stores supports services to people locally and contributes to community conservation. More at goodwill-suncoast.org. Also, support for WMNF comes from our members. Yes, you. If you gave us money, you're a member. If you didn't give us money, you can become a member. It's super easy. But anyway, support comes from our members and Florida Southern College, encouraging visitors to experience the world's largest collection of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture with a guided campus tour. Tour reservations and details can be found at flsouthern.edu/FLLW. And I hope to have that tour information ready for you in the next week or so, if people who are interested in doing that. So let's get started. It is All Souls Day, and like many of you, probably many people I've loved have passed onwards, and this song, this song is not the song I want to play this moment. This song, I will play that song soon. It's another set of All Souls, but totally different. But this is Jane Siberry and Katie Lang, originally on the soundtrack of a wonderful movie called Until the End of the World. This is Calling All Angels.
Santa Maria, Santa Teresa, Santa Anna, Santa Susanna, Santa Cecilia, Santa Coppelia, Santa Domenica, Mary Angelica, Frater Ashes, Frater Pietro.
It's almost as if you could only cry.
crack the code, then you'd finally understand what this all means. Ah, but if you could, do you think you would trade it all the pain and suffering?
And that's Katie Lang with Jane Sibbery. Wonderful, wonderful song. Also, coming up, want to let you know, thank you for listening. Want to let you know that tomorrow night, you guys, right here, I don't want to play the promo because I did the promo and I don't want to play myself. But tomorrow night is the On Broadway. It's a tribute to show tunes. I am so excited. Flea has been talking about doing this for years. We're going to have some show tunes coming up. Actually, maybe what I'll do is I'll just play the show tune as we get ready to bring Job Site Theater in here to chat about their show, the Thanksgiving play. Oh my God, songs from Hair, Hamilton, South Pacific, Rocky Horror Picture Show, West Side Story, Grease, Jesus Christ Superstar, Fiddler on the Roof, Chicago, and more shows are going to be there. It is going to be so much fun. You might still be able to get tickets today till about 4 o'clock. Tickets in advance are $12, $15 at the door. It is going to be a blast. I've gotten to hear a little bit of rehearsing that people have done, and it is going to be really, really fun. So I hope to see you tomorrow at Skipper's for the On Broadway show tunes thing. It's just going to be, I'm so excited about this. It's ridiculous. I love show tunes. So stick with us for that. All right, be right back with Job Site Theater. And here is one that a little bird named Scott Elliott told me that he would be covering. I think we talked to Mark, but I'm not sure, tomorrow. And this is from The Wiz. So hope you like it.
Don't you carry nothing that might be a load?
There it is!
Dorothy! Look! Dorothy! Ta-da! Woo! Come on, Dorothy! Come on!
Woo! Come on!
So that is going to be a little bit of a Scott Elliott and Talk to Mark for our Broadway tribute. And so he said he's doing Ease On Down the Road and something from Fiddler on the Roof. And I think Summertime. Do we have any Broadway lovers in here? Broadway? Anyway, okay, so it's radio, so people cannot hear you nod.
Oh, yes, we're nodding.
Has anybody done a traditional show tunes show? Anybody in here?
Oh, yeah. I've been in Fiddler, Cabaret, Chicago. Yeah,
quite like a few some
musicals.
Of my favorites.
Yeah.
So, anyone else?
Nope.
I've done one twice.
Which one?
I've been Little Red Riding Hood and Into the Woods.
Ah,
twice.
Right. You just have that innocent projecting.
Who can also pull a knife.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I want in a friend.
King Arthur in Camelot in high school. And that was the lesson where I thought, okay, this is not my cup of tea.
Right, yeah. I could see that. So, but you have been in stuff that has been, I think, both edgy and have the same bon vivant feeling that...
Yeah, truly.
So, but these voices you're hearing, some will be familiar and some won't be. The Thanksgiving play opened up at Job Site Theater last week and goes here. Maybe I should just open up that page and then I keep forgetting we don't have touch screens. And then it plays through
November 17th.
Okay. And... Thanksgiving usually is, for me, I don't really do a lot of Thanksgiving stuff, but I know for a lot of people, it's a huge production with a lot of false narratives sort of involved with it. And it seems that, would it be fair to say the Thanksgiving play is some of the roles, the people in there are trying to change or maybe make people feel, give a new narrative or a different narrative to the play?
Sure. So, I think the most important thing to point out is that the play was written by a Native American, Larissa Fasthorse, and she is an incredible playwright. And this is a 90-minute, I would say, screed against some of the criticism, that she's received, which is, your plays are really great, but it's really hard to cast Native American actors. It's hard to find them.
Wow.
Truly. Mm-hmm. And so this story is sort of her response to that.
Right.
And so it's four very well-meaning white people who are trying to give a culturally sensitive telling of the traditional Thanksgiving story of Native Americans and white European settlers and what that all entails. And of course, hilarity ensues.
So I want everyone to go around and introduce themselves to the listeners, since we have so many people. Listeners can discern your voices. So I'm going to start with Carrie, and then if we could go around and say who the character is that you're playing and if there's something that we should know about that character. Carrie Getz, welcome back to Art in Your Ear. It's been way too long.
It has been. I'm so excited to be here. So I'm Carrie Getz, and I had the honor of directing the Thanksgiving play.
My name is Giles Davis. I'm playing Jaxton Smithton. I am a yoga teacher and a street performer at the farmer's market, where I teach how to compost.
I
pronounced it right.
How woke are you?
Oh, I'm unbelievably woke. I am the wokest straight white male around.
Cisgender.
I know
you have
exactly
to say
cisgender. How it. Oh, I went by the pronoun Z for a full year. Yeah.
I am Dana Morrow.
Welcome, Dana. Your first time on radio.
Yes, my first time on the radio. Ta-da. First time job site show. Super excited to be here. I play Alicia. She is a professional... she's a professional actress from Los Angeles, and she was asked to join this Thanksgiving play, so it was very humbling for her, but she had no idea what she was getting herself into. But she thinks that she can help them, totally.
Adam?
Adam Workman. I play Caden in the Thanksgiving play. He's a third grade history teacher who was assigned to the director for this play, I think to maybe try to keep them on track, but I think I'm the wokest straight white male in the room.
This is one of Christopher Columbus's bros.
Right.
Related to Columbus.
Wow, okay. I already feel the tension. And then there's also one cast member who's not here who plays Logan. Is that right?
Yes, that's Caitlin Easton. And people who are fans of Jobsite have seen her in lots of shows in the past. But she plays the... she's the primary educational, she's the teaching artist who wrote about 15 grants for this, and so it's kind of her show. She's the director, and she really falls apart, and it's great to watch Caitlin play.
I thought Caden was the director. Is there tension there?
So Caitlin's the actress, and so, yes, gotcha, Caden. Yes, he's been assigned by the school board because Logan has a 300-parent petition against her for doing The Iceman Cometh with 15-year-olds.
Okay. So one of the things that was so interesting to me about the show is how, and it was funny because I was reading about it just shortly after someone was shaming me for wanting to travel because of the terrible things that, you know, that you use up so much carbon when you use planes, and never mind anything else that I might do to try to offset it. It was just, that was it. Like, they could not even really talk to me, like literally would not talk to me anymore because I fly on planes. And I was just like, oh my God, please. You know, and then I was like, oh, okay, so let me get into this play. And I was like, oh my God. So I wonder, have you all had experiences or experienced people that are sort of being looked at in the Thanksgiving play? Have you experienced these people in real life?
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Myself, I've mingled with them in Oregon and California. Very good, close friends, but, you know, virtually impossible to spend a decent amount of time with without getting railed. I think in my colloquial speech, I use guys, you know, as in the group. Hey, guys, let's go, you know. I read the Riot Act by a couple of the ladies that we were traveling with, and they I am not a guy. Well, I wasn't calling you a guy so much as just using the term of gang or, you know. But again, yeah, word choice. Just, you know, really important for some people. They think that, you know, the whole philosophy or... you know, the correct thing to do is rail against somebody for their perspective or, their word choice.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to been there? It seems to me that that is important to be conscious of your words, but maybe inspiring people to do something rather than shaming to do something. So I was wondering, does this play have any inspiring or shaming parts to it? She said... innocently.
I think it's satire. The entire theme of the show is satirical. So in a way, it is sending up and asking the audience to examine all of those things. Is this the thing that we should be shaming? Is this the thing that we're supposed to be aware of? Are we properly... as white people, you know, and I, you know, the listeners can't hear the air quotes of allies, you know, as these enlightened white allies, air quotes, mm-hmm. are handling these things, using this terminology, debating appropriations, pros and cons. It really forces us all to laugh at the ridiculousness of what white people, the lengths white people will go to say that they are an ally. Mm-hmm. And most of the time what they're doing is talking themselves out of that which makes them feel uncomfortable. And so that's what really the crux of the show is. I think that's where the really intense laughs come from, are the more earnest they're getting with their performative wokeness, the more we as the audience see what a ridiculous exercise this is if you're not doing it from a place of authenticity and with that, in this case, Native American person next to you, with you, having an opinion about what's going on, instead of trying to go, well, we're white people, but we'll do our best to figure this out for everybody, which is what this show is.
So did it hit any were there any uncomfortable moments for you guys? I know, did anything come a little bit too close in the script?
I think uncomfortable is an excellent word. I think it also...
you know, it really makes you think about your own privilege quite a bit, you know, and which is an interesting rabbit hole to jump down, and not necessarily pivotal to getting the character per se, but just getting new things to think about in your everyday life about, you know, being white and the privilege that goes along with that, you know.
Yeah, as actors, we always want to look good on stage. Yeah, want the audience to receive our character in the best light. But there are times when that does neither serve the character nor the play, satire in particular. So you've got to be willing to look ugly. Now, and of course the actor is aware of that, but the character is completely unaware of that. And you have to be willing to go there. So that, you know, and trust the fact that the other actors will do the same. I know I'm not the villain of the piece, but there are, you know, innumerable number of times through the play where I'm like, I can't believe that just came out of my mouth. And as an actor, you know, our tool is the word, so I can make words say anything. So you're constantly backing off on the punch of the word because you don't want to be the a-hole. When in order to serve the play, you really have to just lay into it and be oblivious. And that's the trick, I think, with tackling a play like this.
Dana, does your character, or do you as a person, is your character pretty aware of what's going on, or is...
No. Not at all.
Huh? What?
She walks in and she's like, is this a portable? Am I in a high school portable right now? She, you know, she has no idea what she's doing, but she thinks that she can... When she hears a sentence, she'll just hear one word of it, and she's like, oh, I know what you're talking about. He's going on about Spain and tech and all these things. I'm like, oh, I might be a little bit Spanish. And they're like, okay, anyways. And yeah, so I try not to relate to my character too much, but there are a few lines she says. She's very fun. Yes.
She's the one character I think who is written with absolutely no subtext. If she thinks it, it comes out of her mouth.
Right. Yep. We all have those people in our life, and sometimes I myself am very curious about what it would be like to be that person, to like just sort of say something to somebody else without thinking about what they might know or not know or anything, just be that person. And mm-hmm. So, you know, yay that you get
simplicity
to do that on stage. So the Thanksgiving play, written by a Native American, and looking at sort of wokeness, air quote wokeness, which is something that's going on right now. It's hard to experience pop culture without seeing a big swerve going on, or many people pulling it in many different ways. So with this play, were there a lot of choices as how you could do things, or was it written in such a way that it was pretty clear as to what path it would take?
It is highly interpretive. It's a real credit to Larissa Fasthorse that she trusts companies, directors, actors so much. The Thanksgiving play is the most produced play in regional theater this season. And because of the name and the timing, we're all doing it right now. So it's really fascinating. It's really great. And I encourage people, go on Instagram or any of the social media accounts, type in the hashtag Thanksgiving play, yeah. And you're just going to see all over the country. And what I'm having so much fun is every single production looks so different. Mm-hmm. And it's because we have that right. Some people have very nice looking classrooms, which is the primary set. Ours doesn't. It looks like a typical underfunded public school classroom. So ours is a lot dirtier and grittier than some of the ones I've seen. There's what we call interstitials. There's little vignettes in between the show where our wonderful cast goes off and they play children. And you watch them grow up through Thanksgiving shows like that you would go and see as a parent. And those costumes are so varied. Ours are very, very homemade looking, right. But some people have like really outrageous costumes. And so I think that we all have interpreted our own version of this as much as we can. We've been really fortunate. We have an incredible costume designer in Katrina Stevenson and a set designer, Brian Small, here. And of course, we've had some incredible, Jeremy Douglas has done all of our original
right.
music.
Yeah. So. And then Joe Avril Snell is with
then
you guys.
Joe
it's a really good team.
Every single production element gets its own laugh in this show. Like the second gets a laugh, the costumes get a laugh, the lights get a laugh, the sound gets a laugh. So it's
been
a no, it's true. Yeah. Every single I've never had a show where the design elements actually get laughs. So.
Well, we're listening to and talking with the cast and director, or most of the cast and the director of the Thanksgiving play. It's up at Job Site Theater until November 17th. And is there room, if it gets crazy, is there room to extend it or be like, you guys better get your tickets now?
You should definitely get your tickets now, and we would love to have that problem.
Right, yeah. Yeah. It's always a good problem. Is there something, you know, because is there something that a piece of the show that you guys can do to sort of give a taste to our audience as to what they might expect?
Yeah.
We can.
Does it need any type of setup?
I will give the basic setup that Jaxton and Logan have had a bit of a lover's quarrel in front of the rest of the cast.
Oh,
and
dear.
She's sort of stormed off, and this is the aftermath after Jaxton and Skanan had a bit of a meditation about what happened.
Ooh, that meditation was deep. I faced a lot about myself and my privilege.
I don't know that I could hear my girlfriend say that kind of stuff about me and be okay with it.
I know her lashing out is not about her and me, but actually her double X's fighting back against centuries of patriarchal oppression. It's not personal. Well, it felt personal for a second, which I totally needed, but intellectually, I know to filter anything she says to me through layers of justified feminine rage.
So no matter what she says, you don't believe it?
Oh, I believe she believes it, but I know to trust myself first.
Ah.
Not everybody's ready for tantric, right? Yeah, you play oppressed characters a lot. How do you get in touch with that as a person of privilege?
I imagine that I am that character, so I feel what they feel.
Mm-hmm. But do you use substitution technique from your own life, or method, or what?
I pretend to be them.
That's it?
Yeah. And I can make myself cry on command.
What, like in a scene?
No, like right now.
Wow.
That is impressive.
I listed on my special skills. People ask me to do it in auditions all the time.
I'm getting what Logan was saying about you. You're so simple.
She called me simplicity.
That's it. Mm. You know, you should teach workshops. People would dig that.
It seems you either have simplicity or you don't. Smart people don't get it. I just tried with Logan. She couldn't do it.
Ah, so I'm probably too smart.
Maybe. He is, for sure.
Hey, I'm okay with that.
But still, you know, you could charge people money to come listen to you.
That's what I do now. Oh, I'm an actress.
You are blowing my mind. I mean, seriously, mind blown.
No one has ever said that to me before when I had my clothes on.
And why?
And
oh my God. It seems, you know, it just seems really fun to get to play these characters. Is that...
We have way too much
fun. Yeah, way too much fun. It is lovely to be doing something that brings us together as a community, particularly in these turbulent times, just to laugh and experience joy, and so much more powerful when what we're doing is laughing at ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, in air quotes, that she does a brilliant job of creating a play that, regardless of the perspective, you're able to laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you're walking in the door with, there will be something to laugh and to, you know, learn and appreciate from a sense of joy.
Is that sort of a hard quality to find in good plays?
I think the good, it's something that all good plays have in common.
Right.
So I think that's the diplomatic answer. I mean, I think all
okay, let's go
plays.
For the non-diplomatic answer. Is it hard to find? Is it hard
good
to
plays.
Find
yes.
good plays? It's hard to find good plays where you can laugh, you know, you can have fun with the character and laugh at yourself, but not feel like you're betraying stuff.
I, I will put it.
Don't have to be diplomatic on the show.
I'm not being diplomatic.
Stop being diplomatic.
I will say that this got me out of hibernation. I haven't directed in over 5 years.
I know.
And I'll be honest, it's because there hasn't been a lot of scripts that I've picked up and said, I absolutely have to do this.
Right.
And David Jenkins sent this to me back in March, and I made it to page 5, and I was like, I have to direct the show.
Right.
That was five pages in. It jumps off the page as something that just isn't out there right now and that we need so much more of.
Mm. So one of the things that's been in my head a lot, started years ago, but partially based on the reaction to two movies, to the Black Panther and to the female-led Ghostbusters. And there was a lot of like, what? This is, you know, a discomfort with having this sort of, you know, turning something, a known product, turning it, you know, and rotating it and looking at it in a different way. And many, many conversations have with friends and people I don't know have been about what's wrong with changing it up? Like, aren't we better if we expand stuff? Like, how is limiting better? It's better to expand. So I'm kind of wondering if you have had with people around you with this show, because it's definitely kind of mocking to a degree that, you know, wokeness and like, how woke can you be? Have you had reactions from people about this or discomfort or sort of like people being like, I'm not ready. I don't know.
I have not. And I think it's, you know, a credit to the playwright and to the play itself that people walk away with, wow, aren't we are so ridiculous, that was just brilliant, as opposed to, what are you pointing a finger at me? You know, there's too much joy in the experience of it to see that the finger is getting pointed at, you know? It's just, you know, wow, we are so ridiculous.
Yeah. If anything, we get those good cringes where they're like, oh, they really went there.
Right.
It is a remarkably judgment-free, judgmental zone.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, Adam, when you were starting, you were talking about, like, sort of that awareness, you know, like mm-hmm. a little bit of a heightened awareness. Is it something that when you are, or anybody, like when you're reading something or watching something or seeing people's reaction, I have this really horrible, horrible addiction to Twitter. And I'm working on, like, bringing, you know, getting in control. And so I'll just be scrolling through Twitter. I'm like, what did that guy just say? Oh, my God. You know, but, or the mansplaining or, you know, all that stuff. Are there certain areas you're like, I had no idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think pretty common that a lot of our social media are filled with, you know, quote unquote, woke people. And so then, you know, scrolling through these things and you saying mansplaining, I think is just a perfect term, you know, that people think they're saying the right thing or being woke or being, you know, culturally conscious about things. And it's really like, you are absolutely speaking from a place of privilege right now, you know, and there are things, I mean, it's really incredible what this, you know, started doing this thing and I was like, oh, this will be a funny satire, you know, and then it starts to make you question about, whoa.
I knew that.
Yeah, wait. Oh gosh, I'm terrible. Like, you know, so yeah, it's really interesting, and yeah, it certainly changes your whole outlook on looking at, you know, people trying to give you their opinion and them thinking that they're right, you know, that they're coming from the place of, you know, the most equal or equitable place, and really it's like, no, actually you're on the pedestal right now and you've put yourself there and mm-hmm. you think that your opinion is, you know, the right, you know, it's all eye-opening and interesting, and yeah who knew that this play would do this to me, but yeah, it's yeah, right, it's just, you know, like, oh, sweet, we'll go be funny for a little while. Oh, I'm a terrible person. Like, okay, I'm with us.
But you know, I think that you can't really be, if you're trying, you know,
exactly.
Like if
oh,
you're,
right.
If
right.
I, you know, the person that I was kind of dragging on earlier was so self-satisfied that, I mean, if she, I think, had been more earnest
right.
or
mm-hmm.
worried, I would have been like, okay, I get it. But she was just so completely satisfied.
Come from a place
with herself.
Of partnership, like you
right,
know, let's
yeah.
discuss this, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to you're on that side, you're in the wrong.
And mm-hmm. and I have to say, and I am not buttering up my listeners, one of the things that I appreciate about WMNF is that those conversations happen where people will listen you know, instead of waiting to hear, like waiting to talk, there's active listening. And I think that's one of the biggest parts of being woke is listening to what other people have to say rather than trying to wave your flag and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'm going to ask you, Carrie, so returning to directing, you said you haven't directed in 5 years.
Actually over 5 years, because my son is 5 and a half and I was pregnant with him the last time I directed. Right. So it's been over 5 years. Yeah.
What coming back after that length of time, what is surprising you? What is new in your toolbox? What's a little bit different? You now have a son, mm-hmm. and you're talking about, you know, there's focus in this.
There's certainly, there's certainly an expectation that when I do something, I want to do it for the better of something else, right? Nothing like a kid to make you want to make the world a better place. And not that you have to have kids to have that. I was a very righteous person prior to his birth. but if I'm going to take this time away from him and, you know, do all those things, I definitely want to know that I'm doing it for the right reasons. And this show in particular, I knocked it out of the park when I cast it. I mean, I just, I'm awesome. And I cast the most awesome possible people.
I'll agree with that.
Good job.
So I will say that, you know, I may have had to brush the dust off in a couple of places, but, you know, casting, I spot on, got the right people, and that made the work that much easier to do. And then the other thing that I think is that's been difficult, I've never directed a show where I know that the difference between this being successful and hitting the right tone and this being preachy or come from a place of too much judgment. You know, there is a fine line that we have to walk here, and I think we've done an excellent job doing that, but the pressure to get it right, and quite frankly, I'm a white person. I'm one of the people we're going to be making fun of. So I had to make sure that I was honest with myself so I could get the cast to be honest with themselves and being like, let's do this. Let's make fun of ourselves. Let's outwoke each other. There's a common phrase in directing that you say louder. It's usually like, what is it? Louder, faster,
bigger, stronger,
funnier,
more,
yeah, what are that, but I tell this cast louder, faster, whiter. And so, you know, just really driving that home. And I will say, I cried a lot doing this show. They never saw it, but I would just go home and be like, am I doing this right? Am I honoring the piece? Am I serving the work? I took it very, very, very seriously because I didn't want to get anything wrong.
And I know all different theater companies have sort of different ways of working together. And this is not your first job site at all.
It's my third.
Not at all your first job site.
Neither. Oh, no.
Dana's your first job site.
Yes, it is.
So different companies have sort of different ways of working. And is job site a theater that where there you get feedback from people who are not on the stage? Are there ways, you know, especially for a show like this, comedy to me seems to be such a difficult thing to direct, to mm-hmm. understand the beats and the, you know, the not too far, but sometimes too far. So how does it work within the job site theater production, as opposed to somewhere else, or even just for you guys? Like how is that community of job site working to get this play on the stage?
I would say on the spectrum, we really lean more collaborative. Wouldn't you guys say? Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of other companies, yeah, we're much more. We had a lot of eyes on this. We brought in a lot of folks to help us through this process, and I'm going to give a huge shout out, and she's a WMNF friend too, so she might even be listening. Maggie Council DiPietra came out, and saw it. We brought her about 2.5 weeks into the process, mm-hmm. and she was amazing with her. Yeah. You know, she's gonna laugh if she's listening. You know, she brought her Native American wisdom.
Right. Well, that's what I said. That's true. Like you would want to have. I mean, you would want to have. I know that David had asked me for contact information for Alvon, and you know, I mean, you want to have people there. You know, because to be true to what the show is about, you want to make sure that, you know, that there's an inclusivity mm-hmm. in moving forward with it.
And we do, and David does a really nice job. David was sort of our moral compass on this, and I mean that without any satire. All of our lobby art is by Native American artists, and he acknowledges in the curtain speech recording that, you know, we are there on the lands of the Tocobaga people, mm-hmm. and we honor the Seminole tribes. And so we try to do our bit. We try to do our part to really acknowledge, because a lot of people really came together. And, you know, David went to people and said, this is the show we're doing. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have any insights? And the generosity that people showed to really a group of white people saying, hey, help us, please. We're here to listen. We want to get this right. And it's been a really extraordinary process.
So now the thing that's so interesting, and of course this is not on you, but that you have a Native American playwright who is a, is it Sikandu? Is that who you say it? Lakota playwright who is writing about white people. So of course that's, you know, like she's being like, all right, here you go. Go for it. In her notes or her other stuff, is there, you know, does she give direction like, hey, go talk to these people or be aware of this? Or she's just like, do it. If you're going to do it, make it yours.
She really is. I mean, now she's gone on record in several interviews and talked about how pleasantly surprised she's been at the gestures and overtures that people have done when they have done this show, and really lifts that up, but does not expect it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a right. I think for her it's a value add, but it's not something that she writes or expects in the script.
That's awesome. Well, we're almost out of time. I just want to ask people if anybody has anything coming up. Are you going to do another? Has this brought the fever back?
Yes. I'm just going to say yes.
So send Carrie good scripts.
Please.
There you go. Send her some good scripts. Anybody have something coming up? Any that they want to plug coming up in the future? Doing anything?
Giles and I will be in Midsummer with Jobsite immediately following this, which will be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Just after New Year's.
Excellent. Yeah. One of my favorites.
Yeah. I've done the play innumerable number of times. Yeah. At least seven on stage.
So who are you guys?
I'll be Oberon.
And I'm playing Puck this Bottom this time.
Bottom.
Which
this time.
I have not done.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I get to play a new one, which I'm excited about.
I saw you do Puck. I want to feel like I saw you do someone. Did you do Oberon?
I've done Oberon. I've done Theseus. Mm-hmm. I've played Puck. Flute.
Bottom seems really fun.
Indeed. I'm looking forward to it.
It's the only, I think, it was in other plays, but that was my big lead role was Titania. And I only got it because I had purple and blue hair. There was no other reason I got it.
I could
sleep on stage very well. Like, I was really good at sleeping on stage. One time I actually fell asleep on stage. So.
Danger.
So, Dana, do you have anything coming up that we...
I'm going to Miami for a few months to do some children's theater, which is going to be super, super fun. I'll be there till about March. And then after that, I don't have anything. I'm hoping to do some more.
And then I have not... I'm sad to say that I've not interviewed you before. Are you based here in the Tampa Bay area?
I am, yes. I live north in Newport Richey, but I work around here. I've done some work at Early Bird Dinner Theater in Clearwater and Francis Wilson Playhouse in Clearwater as well. Right. But yeah.
So cool. All right. Well, thank you all so much for coming
in.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And is there, you know, one thing I did not ask, and I'm sorry, I just realized that you sometimes do this and I did not pay attention. Are there any, we might have missed all of the talkbacks, or is there any other events coming up?
There will be a talkback on November 7th. November 7th is the scheduled talkback.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So November 7th, you can go online to jobsitetheater.org and get more information. You can get tickets, and they have videos and all sorts of stuff. Thank you all so much for coming in, and
thank you.
I'll see you for Midsummer, since it is my favorite Shakespeare play.
Nice.
So we're going to go out. It is, as I said, for me, All Souls Day, apparently for many people, but All Saints Day. This is not a sainty thing, but I was trying to think, what songs reflect dead people? So, you know, here's one.
Jesus is the clue. He was 12 years old. Fell from the roof on East 29. Kathy was 11 when she pulled the plug. 26 reds and a bottle of wine. Bobby got leukemia, 14 years old. He lived at 65 when he died. He was a friend of mine. Let the gimmicks go rot. So they died of hepatitis in Upper Manhattan. Sly in Vietnam, bullet in the head. Bobby OD'd on Drano on the night that he was wed. They were two more friends of mine. Two more friends that died. From a hotel room, Bobby hung himself from a cell in the tombs. Judy jumped in front of a subway train. Eddie got slit in the jugular vein.
And Eddie, I miss you more than all the others. And I salute you, brother. Tony thought that his rage was just some goof, but Herbie sure gave Tony some bitchin' proof. And Herbie said, Tony, can you fly? But Tony couldn't fly. Tony died. Busted on a narco rap. He beat the rap by ratting on some bikers. He said, hey, I know it's dangerous, but it sure beats Rikers. But the next day, he got hauled by the very same biker. Fell from the roof on East 29. Kathy was 11 when she pulled the plug on 26 Red in a bottle of wine. Bobby got leukemia, 14 years old, looked like 65 when he died. Georgie let the gimmicks go rotten. They died of hepatitis in Upper Manhattan. Slime in Vietnam took a bullet in the head. Bobby OD'd on Drano on the night that he was wet. They were two more friends of mine. I miss them. They died. Dried up from a hotel room. Bobby hung himself from a cell in the tube. Judy turned in front of the subway train. And Eddie got slit in the jugular vein. Eddie, I miss you more than all the others. This song is for you, my brother.
That is the punk rock morning song, Jim Carroll, People Who Died. Hey, we've got something coming up I want to let you know about.
It's the most spectacular...
Oh, wait, no, not that one. All right, let's try this again.
WMNF turned 40 in September, and we had a big birthday party. But we're not done celebrating. On Saturday, November 9th, WMNF presents You've Got a Friend.
You've got a friend in me.
40 years of peace, love, and music. An improv theater event performed at the Friends Meeting House, 1502 Sly Avenue in Tampa. So how did you learn about WMNF? Did you have a cool experience at a WMNF concert? Make some friends or even find a special someone? Did a song on the air inspire you? Then come share your story of how WMNF has been a part of your life and watch as actors from the Living Mirror Playback Theater troupe perform those stories, improvising on the spot with words, movement, and music. It's a unique experience that can be funny, moving, and exhilarating. The show starts at 6 p.m. November 9th. Seating is limited, so call 813-238-8001 to save yours. Suggested donation is $10 in advance, $15 at the door.
That is going to be really fun. Put on, I believe, by our own Ed Lehman. Oh my goodness, we're starting to run out of time, and I want to let you know stuff going on around town. The Veterans Community Open Mic returns. It's always the first Sunday of the month at Tre Amici at the Bunker in Ybor City. It starts at 6:30. It goes till about 9. Andrea Asif, friend of WMF, Andrea Asif, and Jessica Janine, DJ Katani will be there, and it's a way for artists, veterans, poets, speakers, everyone gets a chance to get in front of the mic in a really good situation, a very welcoming committee. And so you can go to that. The Bunker is located in Ybor City. It's located at 1907 North 19th Street in Ybor. And there's usually parking right behind it. So there you go. There's a ton of other stuff going on. Hey, I went to the Museum of Fine Arts to see the grasshopper and the ant exhibit, and it is mind-blowing. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have some people from that in here. But I am going to ask you, please go to the Art in Your Ear Facebook page, and there is a album full of pictures from it, and look at it, and it will blow your mind. It is one of the most beautiful, interesting shows I've seen ever. So go check that out. All right, we're out of here. Coming up next is the live music showcase. And so that's going to be fabulous. After that, of course, we have the Rhythm Revival, the Bumpy Ride, Route 66, Soul Party. There's so much good music, so much good stuff every single day here on 88.5. Thank you for being one of our listeners. Thank you. I hope to see you at the Broadway tribute tomorrow night at Skipper's Smokehouse. It starts at 6:30. I bet you'll hear this song coming up. Stay tuned for the NPR news, and then, of course, the live music showcase.
But it's no great honor either.
You are listening to WMNF Tampa.
So what would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune?
If I were a rich man, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum, all day long I bidda-bidda-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. If I were a bidda-bidda-rich, idle-diddle-diddle-diddle-man, I'd build a big tall house with the rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with the real wooden floors below. There would be one long staircase just going up and one even longer coming down. And one more leading nowhere just for show. I'd fill my yard with the chicks and turkeys and geese and ducks for the town to see and hear, squawking just as noisily as they can. And each loud will land like a trumpet on the ear, as if to say, here lives a wealthy man. If I were a rich man, yabba dibba 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 dum, all day long I biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard, yabba dibba 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 dum. If I were a biddy biddy rich, idle diddle 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 man, I see my wife, my golden, looking like a rich man's wife with a proper double chin, supervising meals to her heart's delight. I see her putting on airs and strutting like a peacock. Oh, what a happy mood she's in, screaming at the servants day and night.
The most important man in town will come to fawn on me. They will ask me to advise them like a Solomon.